Fantasy Baseball Elite. Jeff Manns here with Ray Flowers in another all-free fantasy baseball podcast. Boy, this is good time. No restrictions, no commercials, Ray Flowers, just you and I going toe-to-toe talking some baseball. How great is this?
It's fantastic, and I think that the first version here that we put out was received pretty well, so thank you to everyone that listened. Spread the word. Like Jeff said, we're doing this free to just kind of get you ready, get the juices flowing, get you ready to join us at Fantasy Guru with our season-long product for the entirety of the season.
Yeah, man, the Fantasy Guru Draft Guide is up right now, fantasyguru.com. Get it now with the early bird prices, and it's for the whole season, by the way, all season long, so whatever you – style of fantasy baseball you play, we have it for you. We have you covered from draft guides and preseason and spring training and all that good stuff to waiver wires and trades and all-star breaks and all that good stuff all the way through the season. One low early bird price right now, so check that out. These podcasts will remain free, of course, because quite honestly, as good as it is for you guys, it's also great for us just to let loose, not have to do any heavy lifting. We're just talking off air. Like, this is just so easy for us. It's so much fun to be able to talk some baseball. I know Ray Flowers loves it as well. How great is it? Do you feel like a burden is off you now that you get to talk baseball instead of football?
Yeah, it's nice. Yeah. I would talk baseball season long, as you're well aware, Jeff, if I had the opportunity. There's always something to discuss. There's always too much to discuss, really. So the opportunity here to just let it rip and, you know, talk about whatever the hell we want and have it all centered around baseball, I can give the thumbs up to that one, Jeff.
Yeah, that's right up Ray Flowers' alley. Speaking of which, by the way, over at fantasyguru.com, a part of the – if you're a VIP subscriber or member, you buy the VIP package, we have a chat room over there where a lot of these things – and Ray and I were talking about this off-air as well. Like, Ray does so much work. I was yelling at Ray Flowers this morning. I'm like, dude, you do – so much work on the rankings. There's so many. How many players total ranked?
I mean, it's like 600 mixed, and then it's, you know, each one split. So I'm 700 probably.
And it's by by position. It's, you know, you've got AL, NL. You got all these different things. And Ray is so meticulous about constantly updating, constantly moving things around. Ray's Flowers is so fast with the rankings that – he literally, technology can't keep up with you adjusting these things. So what happens is sometimes, and we'll talk about AJ Pollock later. AJ Pollock signs with the Dodgers. We'll get into a deeper discussion about this in a little bit. But like, Ray wants to adjust it, and it takes a little while for the technology. Ray makes the change, and technology is slow. Jump in the chat room, guys. Hit us up in that chat room. Tag Ray. Tag myself. Whoever your question is for, Vlad Sedler, Ted Schuster, Benny Ricciardi. Tag us and be, hey, man, Pollock just signed. What do you think? And we check this chat room every single day. I think all of us are jumping in there for at least a period of time. We're going to have assigned chat room times or office hours where Ray will be in there answering your questions. I'll be in there a couple days a week. And, you know, hit us up in there if you need that real-time sort of, you know, conversation. I think it's a part of what we do over at Fantasy Guru, Ray, that people need to take advantage of.
Yeah, and it's something new because obviously we offer it for football, but it is something new for baseball with our new baseball product this year. The transition over to fantasyguru.com gives us the opportunity to do this. And just to reiterate what Jeff said, there's basically two packages here, folks. Whichever one you get the draft guides. It doesn't matter for that, but you get the entire season as well. There's the regular package, and then there's the VIP package. In order to be part of this live chat that Jeff's talking about, you want to be in the VIP package. You buy just the regular one, you don't have access this way. So you can spend a couple extra bucks. It's $15 right now, if I'm not mistaken, with
the whole season
pricing. For the whole season.
For 6 months.
Yeah, you can ask a question every day for the next 6 months if you want, or actually be 8.5 months if you want, for an extra $15. So Go get the VIP package. You get the draft guide. You get all the articles, and you get access to that live chat. And it'll be a lot of fun because, you know, I try to answer, and I'm probably pretty much as active as anyone on Twitter at Baseball Guys. Yep. But it's nice to be able to know that it's – our listeners, you know, I can put a little extra into it. It's not 6 words. It can be 65 because I know this person really cares and is appreciating and paying for our work. So just another chance and way for us to be in touch with the listeners and the users.
I hate doing the promo stuff, but man, it's a community and it's what we've built over time. Those of you who know us from Guru Elite, what we're doing with all of our, the fantasyguru.com, the Guru Elite, it's a community. It's a way, it's a area you guys get access to us. We get to help teach you guys, mentor you, help get you on the right path and the winning. Make the wisest moves. You know, be ahead of our competition. And that's what it's all about. We're all together in this fight, you know, against our league mates, against our DFS rivals and all this good stuff. So, and it's a good community to be a part of, because even if like Ray and I aren't there, there are some great people, very wise subscribers we have that are answering questions and telling you what they think. And they're playing in high stakes NFBC type leagues, or they playing in, you know, all these kinds of, you know, big time competitions. And, you know, they're sitting around, you get their opinions too. So don't underestimate the power of the Elite Mafia. Ray, you and I are just arriving home from Tampa, Florida, which sounds like it's a nice little getaway. But unfortunately, it's about 48 hours for us in Tampa, right?
Less for me, yeah.
Yeah, less than. What were you there, 40 hours only?
Like 39, yeah, something like that.
Crazy how little you were there. And it was work, 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 running around. It was the FSTA, Fantasy Sports Trade Association, Winter Conference. And then they throw a big announcement at the start that it's no longer the FSTA. It's the FSGA, which means Fantasy Sports and Gaming Association. You know, FSTA has been around since the 90s. It's sort of, I don't want to say a governing body, but a regulatory. It, you know, when MLB's labor unions want to come after us and try to use our and say we can't use statistics or player likenesses for fantasy purposes, it's the body that fought them off, and same with football and all this kind of stuff. So it's very important. And you know, everybody from the ESPNs and Yahoos and all the big box stores to people starting their own blog go to these events. So it's a great chance for us to get together, talk about the issues at hand. This FSGA thing, for one, I'll never get used to saying FSGA.
Yep, well,
never going to happen. But, you know, your opinion, they're embracing the gaming aspect, the sports betting aspect of this. Your reaction to this change for the sort of a governing body?
Yeah, I think that it was the wise thing to do. It's hard to rebrand and change name and deal with all that. You know, that is something that they'll have to overcome. Like you said, we're all going to say FSTA for the next 9 months. But I think it was a wise move. The issue that I have with the migration is that, and again, I did not talk to every person. I did not attend the every.
Ted Schuster did.
Yeah, Ted did. Ted was talking to everyone.
Ted was a social butterfly.
He totally was.
Everyone's like, this guy's been on the radio for 8 years. I haven't heard him speak more than 30 words a show. And he's networking like a son of a gun. He was a social butterfly.
No, I even looked up and he was outside talking to strangers. Like he was all, Ted, I don't know what happened to Ted, but he's all grown up.
Yeah. How about that?
I didn't talk to everyone and, you know, but my sense of the pulse was that we might need to be a little careful here because, and I've heard this from people on Twitter and, you know, it's SiriusXM. I'm sure you have too. It's like some people love both angles. Some people love one side more than the other. But I'm a little nervous that the fantasy part of all this is going to get trampled, going to get run over. Because it seems like, just like it was a couple of years, 5 years ago, 7 years ago, when all the money started coming in with DFS, it's like no one cared about season long, and then it was DFS. And then DFS kind of took a dip, and now everyone cares about gaming. It's like everything is part of it. I just hope, Jeff, that we don't lose the fantasy part of it, and I'm a little worried about that.
You know what I'm more scared of?
What?
It's – I think we are going to lose. The fantasy side will lose some people. For one, I don't mind that because, you know, I look at it this way. Anybody that wasn't that into it anyway, that are just was looking for the next big thing, they're going to look for the next big thing anyway and go and gravitate. You know what I mean? Those are people that don't matter anyway. But those are also the people we love competing against. We have a huge edge in the season-long game, even in DFS, over those people. Those are the people we prey upon, quite honestly. You know, the have-nots, the people that are sort of have one eye on the line, you know, what's the line, what's the total, what's the player props, and the other half in the DFS pool, and the other, you know, or one-third in each, and then one-third in their season-long draft. I love competing against those guys. Those are where we make our money. So that's what makes me the most nervous, is I hate the fact that we're picking off some of the bottom feeders. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. So that worries me a little bit about this whole transition, but you know, here, what we can say with our sites and the communities at fantasyguru.com and Guru Lead is like, we're going to honor all elements. We're into gaming. We'll talk about player props and future bets and, you know, in-game bettings and things, you know, in-game odds. We'll talk about some of that stuff, but we're never ever going to leave fantasy, ever. Like, that, Ray and I have been around a long time. You know, we talked about on the intro of the season, I think, Ray, you've been around over 20 years. I've been around 14 years in this space, and we're not going anywhere. I'm going to play fantasy baseball to the day I die. I know you will as well. We'll be playing fantasy sports to the day we die. And that's never going to change. And I embrace differences, and I embrace changes that need to be made to the seasonal game or what have you, but it's in our hearts and souls. So we'll still continue to play, and I think the future will as well. So not as worried about that. Things will always change. I'm worried about the competition getting better. What did you think about – so we threw a party with the entire industry for Guru Elite, and we had an open bar party. I think we prepaid like $2,000 for the entire industry to drink, and we had to put in three more times to up the bar total because of how much the fantasy industry – we literally had 150 people across the industry at this party. It got pretty wild, too. People were making out on couches. People were dancing. People were on tables. People were arguing and fighting. Yeah, I know. And that was just Ray Flowers.
Yeah, I know. That was before midnight.
Yeah, exactly. But it was a pretty fun party, Ray.
Yeah. You know, I got to be honest. Some of the people there I didn't even recognize. Did you recognize everyone?
No, I really didn't. Not everybody.
Yeah.
No. I recognize a bunch of people that hate us.
Oh, but they will take the free drink?
It was unbelievable. Yeah, and I don't care. I mean, I don't think I hate many people. I don't hate anybody, really. I hate no man. So what I always say, I don't respect certain people. I think that's bigger than hating. But yeah, I saw some people that are majorly anti. Always be careful out there, people. You think people are anti-Elite Mafia, those guys are crazy or whatever. They were at the party. They were some of the first in line. So, you know, always be careful what people say outwardly or on Twitter and Facebook and Instagram, because those guys were at the party tearing it up too.
When they're wearing around their Guru Elite t-shirt too?
Yes, their free t-shirt.
That they were happy to grab, yeah.
What was the highlight of the event in Tampa? Highlight of your time at the FSGA conference, what would it be?
Probably asking the model we had at the table for her phone number.
That was hilarious. I was going to bring that up if you didn't. So you're smart to...
See, I'm smart, yeah.
That was good. Tell everybody how you did it. We hired. God, so disgusting.
What year is it, Jeff?
It was like a model. She was a local gal that was there. We had photographers, videographers, all that to talk to people and hand out t-shirts and my stupid face. We had stickers of my face, by the way.
Fantastic.
And somehow Ray Flowers, she's sitting at the table, and you did a smooth operator move where you somehow asked for her phone number.
Yeah, well, see, you know, I sat there and talked to her for a while. You know, you were out meeting with people, and so I was kind of manning the booth a little bit. Rob was meeting with people, and we were just talking and everything. And one of the things that she had mentioned was that she had had trouble getting into the event because there's a fee associated with going to the events, and she didn't have it and wasn't on the list or something. So basically, she had borrowed Rob's pass to get into the event in the morning. And I said for the next day that, you know, Rob was like, I don't know when I'm going to get up and that, and she was worried about getting in the following day. So I said, hey, sweetie, why don't you give me your number, and I'd be happy to come down and make sure that you can get in or bring my pass to you or whatever if you can't get a hold of the other guys. Because anyone that knows me knows that I'm very fastidious with answering tweets and emails and all those kind of things. So I was actually trying to help her get into the conference, but you didn't buy that for more than about a second and immediately jumped in, Jeff.
I heard it from across the room and did like a three giant step leap over me. Like, what did you just do? What did you just say?
Yeah.
For her phone number, Ray Flowers, how creepy can you get?
She's only half my age. Literally. Yeah,
literally half your age.
It could have been my daughter.
Like, seriously, like it was that kind of creepy. So,
but it was legit. I swear it was. I swear, Jeff. Come on.
No, I don't believe enough. I think you always have ulterior motives. But who knows with Ray Flowers? What else was a highlight of the draft? Before we move on, by the way, we're out there technically for the conference and a fantasy baseball draft that we'll get to in a few minutes here. But give me one more highlight before we move on here. Right?
We went to a dinner that wasn't very good. And on the way back, you decided to be who you are, Jeff Manns. Oh. You picked up a cone. It was videotaped at Tommy G. You can find the video. I'm sure I've retweeted it. Jeff retweeted it. Of you walking down the street holding a cone. It had been viewed like 16,000 times.
It's over 25,000 views last time I checked.
Yeah, like 2 hours. So that was fun. I think that gives people an insight to, you know, what we do in between the actual seriousness of the meetings and everything.
Yes. People were pretty enamored with me taking the traffic cone. Is that, by the way, is that a crime?
Yeah, probably.
Really? That's so weird. I didn't realize. It's one of those things where I didn't realize. I'm like, oh, man.
Well, it's a fine. They're not going to throw you in jail. It'd be like,
yeah, jail because you moved the traffic cone.
But... One more highlight real quick. How about my ordering a Irish coffee?
Which the bartender remembered for like 3 days.
Yeah, we ran into her the next night, and she was, oh, Irish coffee. Yeah, so yeah, I thought that was a highlight too. I was able to get it.
I went 2 feet into a bar, ran into Pro Football Focus's Jeff Radcliffe, and I sat down, and I never got up the rest of the night. And when I did, the room was spinning. So,
did you even go to the bathroom? Like, you literally
No, I never go to the bathroom. No, yeah, dude. Yeah. Oh, great story for those interested in my bathroom habits. So, factual information. I have the bladder of a camel. Like, it's just a fact. I don't ever have to, you know, I'm just crazy. I don't ever have to pee. Never. I went, number one, by the way, I took a pee on an airplane for the second time in my entire life. And I've been on planes. I'm a platinum member and all that good stuff on a certain airline. I had to go so bad on the way back from Tampa. And I literally, I started sweating. Like, I held it for so long.
Why'd you just go?
I don't know. I just don't go. On planes, I never go. Never.
You can't stand up.
I am the best inside passenger you can have on an airplane. I will never get up.
Okay.
Never. I never have to move for people. Never happens. So I'm a window seat guy, even though I like the aisle. But the aisle, everybody else, I always get grouped next to people that have to get up every 5 minutes.
Right.
And those people drive me flipping crazy. So I just go on inside. And just never get up. I never bother anybody.
Okay.
Yeah. So breaking news: those of you who are excited about me taking a pee, you got your event for here.
For those of you that tuned into the podcast to hear that information, boom, covered.
Like, what is even happening on this show? Didn't we talk about trannies last time?
We did not. You did.
No. Oh, stop! Like, you're above it all. You agreed with my tranny references there. All right, let's talk about the draft then, Ray Flowers, before we get into news and notes and everything else. So we're out there for the FSGA Experts League draft, and it's going on now. So the way they decided to do it, and we had some off-air conversation about this as well, is they decided – by the way, this is what? 12th year – you've been in it, or maybe
I don't know exactly, but it's been years. Yeah, it's been a while. Yeah,
it's a decade for me. I think it's a couple years longer for you. And it's always in January, so it's really the first official draft of the year. Even though NFBC are doing other drafts and things like that, it's the first like real industry draft of the year. So it's always interesting to see where certain players are going, and especially in modern times when free agents just don't sign anymore. It used to be hot stove and winter meetings, and everybody would be signed by Christmas. Now it's like, no, it's going to be February, for crying out loud. But so it's a little different drafting in January than it used to be. It's even, and then the game's changing and evolving so much. Speed is an issue, pitching, and the use of bullpens and things that we talked about on the first podcast. But Ray, when you're going into a draft, for one, how does this draft in 2019 compare to, let's say, when we were preparing for the same draft in 2014 or 15.
Yeah, I think you're a little wiser. What I have experienced in expert leagues, and I know you have too, Jeff, whether you're doing FSTA or magazines or whatever, the stuff that's early in the season, some people make selections to be the guy that made the selection. Mm-hmm. I'm the one that took Eloy Jimenez. I'm the one that took Victor Robles. Those kind of things. It's like, okay, now are you doing it because it's the right move or because you're trying to be that guy? I've always looked at it that I'm going to draft the best team I can right now. I'm not going to try to be that guy that looks like he was smart 10 months later.
I'm always going to try to be that guy.
I know. Well, there's a difference between the two of us. That's why we're good together. Yeah,
right.
So I try to draft the best team I can. I tend to, as a result, kind of wait on bullpens because so many of the situations are uneven. We don't know where Kimbrel's going to sign. We don't know how some of these situations are going to play out. We know someone's going to get hurt. So I've learned through the years to draft a little differently. To not necessarily try to be the guy, to not necessarily worry too much about bullpens at this point. And also to be smart last year I believe I took Gleyber Torres in the 21st, 22nd round, one of those two, which for me, Ray Flowers, who hates rookies.
You would never have done that normally.
Never would have done that years ago. But it's like at a certain point, you start looking at it and it's like, well, we're at the point in the draft now where they're kind of just guys. And, 270, 14, 63. Woo. Like, is that going to do anything for me? Nah. You know, so I'm going to take a chance on the rookie. So it's a, it's an odd combination of not wanting to be the guy who made the statement, but also being able to understand that the game has changed and taking chances later in the draft with some of these younger players, maybe it's worth doing, because if you're at a replacement level-ish, why not take a chance on the talent of the youngster and the opportunity they may have in April? If it doesn't work out, if the guy's going to be down to the minors for 2 months, you can just go to the waiver wire and replace him with somebody, Jeff.
A draft like this is a rare occurrence because Ray Flowers and I, we're good friends. We worked together a long time. We're very good friends now, on and off the business side of things and all that good stuff. This is a rare time when you and I are competitors against one another. We don't even, like, we really don't play in many leagues. And when we do, it's kind of fun.
Right.
And even this one is just an industry league. It's not the biggest thing. But I will tell you this, that the Torres pick last year, I think there was another one 2 years ago, or maybe it was a labor draft or something else that you did. It's as a competitor, a competitor to Ray Flowers, I go, oh, snap, curse word. Basically, oh, curse word. Because if Ray's going to start taking calculated risks, we're in trouble. Because you were as, profoundly conservative as it gets. You absolutely avoid risk at all costs. Zero fat policy that I do in daily fantasy and stuff is modeled after your sort of seasonal takes, your takes in general. You doing a little tiny risks like that, and especially in the payoff that way, as a competitor, I say, man, that's absolutely lethal, because that's really the perfect mix. It's the one downfall of your game over the years is you've always been, you go so conservative that you end up never getting that breakout guy too early. You just slow and steady, and you win plenty of races, but you will miss out on some of those guys. Now that you're taking that risk, that's a tough one to go by.
Thank you for the compliment while also putting me down. I appreciate
it. Yes, well, that's just sometimes that's true, right?
It is true. It is true. And that's what I'm taking. That's, you learn, right? You live and you learn. You take the data and you continue to make adjustments. I mentioned Eloy Jimenez, who you took in the 11th round. I was one pick away. Howard Bender, Fantasy Alarm, one pick before me, took the guy that I was going to take in the 9th round.
I thought you were going to take Eloy?
I was going to take Victor Robles.
Wow.
So I was going to take
round? Nine?
9th round. I was going to take a rookie 2 rounds before you took yours. So That would have really made you impressed, Jeff, but I missed out by one pick with Howard taking him.
Yeah, absolutely. Now, do you think we've sort of addressed why you're doing it, and you're conservative and you like taking account. Well, I think Robles in the 9th, though, for you, mm-hmm. That's really early for you. It's much different than Gleyber Torres in the 21st or 22nd. Mm-hmm. Is it the Ronald Acuna sort of, is it those guys, those breakouts, the young player breakouts that's pushing you to take more chances? Is that the Ozzie Albies, mm-hmm. the Ronald Acunas, the Sotos, is that what's telling you, okay, maybe Robles is the next version of this guy?
Absolutely part of it. There's also just the general skill set. We were joking this morning because it was my turn in the 12th round, and I needed an outfielder, and I was like, I want to take Byron Buxton. You laughed. You're like, of course you want to take Byron Buxton. Robles is a similar skilled player, but he's better, okay, in the sense that his approach is better. By the way, I took Nomar Mazar instead of Buxton. But in the case –
it was in my queue, Mazar, yeah. I want it, and Buxton went like 6 picks later.
Yeah, there you go. So it was close. But mm-hmm. I look at Victor Robles as a Andrew McCutchen type of player. Who was another one of my favorites, who I also drafted in this draft.
Also drafted.
Yeah. I think Victor Robles is a very similar version to Andrew McCutchen, a guy that's really, really is a 20 home run guy. He's not a 30 home run. He's a 20 home run guy.
Right.
He's got the ability to steal 30 bases. And I don't know if Robles gets to either one of those numbers this year. I don't know if he plays full time. If Bryce Harper goes back to the Nationals, who knows what the Nationals are going to do there with their, they're going to have too many outfielders if Adam Eaton stays healthy. But I just look at Robles, and I think his overall game, his approach, and his speed, which we all are very aware of in 2019, his speed is something that makes it, even if he hits, 260 with 13 home runs, if he's stealing you those 30 bases, still a very usable piece, Jeff.
I look at Robles, and I'm like, and again, this is my Achilles heel, is that I look at these guys too much, and I think, how the hell is he hitting 10 to 20 home runs? Like, there's no way. He's a little pipsqueak of a guy. Is he even 6 foot tall?
Well, Andrew McCutcheon's 5'11", 180.
I know. But very McCutcheon, similar. And McCutcheon was one of those guys that I got an opportunity to scout myself when he was in Indianapolis with the Pittsburgh Pirates organization and that. And like he's stocky. He was sort of ripped before – I don't want to say before it was in vogue because it was after Maguire Sosa. But he was always kind of ripped, whereas like this Juan Soto and Victor Robles, I'm like, these guys are string beans. Like, where are they generating power? But they do. And I think that one of the major changes in fantasy baseball these days, just in the game of Major League Baseball, and you and I addressed it on this very podcast last year and on SiriusXM Radio, is that these guys who don't hit, I'm not worried as home runs anymore.
Right.
Like a guy hits 10 home runs in the minor leagues, okay, yeah, he could hit 20 in the majors. It used to be the opposite. It used to be like, he hits 15 in AAA, he's going to hit 8 to 12 at the most in the major leagues. It's the opposite nowadays where the ball is so lively. We see the home runs decrease. Finally, last year, we didn't get the major totals that we did from 2017, 16, and 15. But at the same time, these guys, even though they don't look like they're going to be power hitters, power's playing up nowadays, and we have to take that into account when we're making our seasonal projections.
Gleyber Torres, who you mentioned earlier, was a 10 home run guy in the minors.
Another one.
And everyone, I mean, people profiled him and said, look, this guy could hit 20 home runs. He's got power. He can hit the ball. Like, everyone thought that was happening. But he goes from hitting 10 home runs in the minors to hitting 24 in his first season.
That's insane.
So it's you're right.
Bats too. It's just insane.
Yeah, you're right. And so you have to reassess. And, you said, where were you at in 2014? I was getting to where I am now. 2004, hell no. And I was nowhere near. I was totally on the opposite end here. But you have to continually adjust. That's something that I tried. Because people say, Ray, you hate this player. Ray, you hate this team. And it's like, no, I'm looking at the data, okay? And if the data is telling me one thing, I'm dumb if I ignore it. And in this instance, everything you just said is correct. What I led into your statement also, I believe, is to be correct. You got to look at these guys differently than you did as recently as 5 years ago.
Really, the game has just changed so much. And, one of the things I always do is for Roto Leagues, which this is 5x5 Roto. It's 29 rounds, 14 teams. So this FST/GA Experts League is a massive draft. That's why we did 2 hours worth in Tampa, Florida. We're continuing the draft in a slow draft variety, going forward. It'll probably take a month for this thing to finish, but it's a massive undertaking, and it will be telling where these guys are going. And we constantly are finding changes and differences in free agency. Now that there are going to be many trades necessarily, but we'll get into spring training and all that. Ray, you got a write-up about this over at Fantasy Guru about this draft, and that you're going to keep that update all the way through, right?
Yeah, I posted it and then made another pick after I posted it. So it's only through the 12 rounds that I've made selections, but there's a link there to the actual draft board. Everyone can go and view it. I have about a paragraph write-up on each of my picks to this point through those.
Did you say
rounds.
How good my picks have been?
I did not. I think I did mention you in the second round because you took Alex Bregman around the pick before me. So I was going to take Alex Bregman. So I did say,
We should talk about that because, this is what, you and I do all the time in this because there's a draft order and then you get to pick where you draft ultimately. And one of the things Ray and I have been doing for years is because, quite honestly, these drafts are so flipping boring. And they used to be 4 or 5 hours of just pure nonsense. People take salt, even though nobody else in this draft will admit it, except for me and you, that I take a little while. There are some times where I'll take 2.5 minutes, 3 minutes to make my pick. No doubt about it. I'm guilty as charged, Your Honor. But nobody else in this draft will admit that they do the same thing, even though there's no way you can take 5 hours of draft, not complete the draft, and it's one person taking all the time. It's all bull crap. But so right now, since it's so boring, we've just been sitting next to each other. We don't care if we take the first and second pick, the 13th, 14th pick, the 7th and 8th, 6th and 7th. We just try to sit next to each other. And we do that every year because we have to sit there and we get to goof around and have fun. But it also comes to the point where we take each other's picks a little bit.
That kind of happened to you in the first round and kind of happened to me in the second round, right?
Yeah, I was surprised. So let's get into the draft as well. For one, I want to address this topic with people here today. And we'll go through our teams. And this, again, we'll update you guys as it goes. Here we'll get to some other plans for fantasy baseball. AJ Pollock signing with the Dodgers still up ahead, But number one overall pick in this one, and Jeff Erickson of RotoWire had the number one pick in this, and we discussed it on a SiriusXM show the other day, but we get to go unfiltered here for as long as we want. Mike Trout, Mookie Betts, it's as close as it's been in at least 4 years for me between Trout and whoever the next best guy is, because I see a case for Mookie Betts, but how do you illustrate these two guys? Who should be the consensus first overall pick? Who would have you taken in this one? And is it as close as I think it is?
I think it is very close because, there's a baseline for players. And when you look at the overall game, you look at the power, you look at the speed, you look at the lineup, you put all these things together. And it's like there's not much to differentiate these guys. And, we talk about it a lot that people, he's a 300 hitter. Well, he hit 287 this year. What the hell? He slumped. It's like, no. He literally had one less hit every 27 games he played. I mean, it's such a small, really such a small number of instances that we're discussing when we're talking about greatness being good, good being solid, solid being average. The bottom line for me is I would take Trout, but I have literally not one issue if anyone took Betts. I can't argue you out of Betts. I would argue for Trout because of his overall game, because of his size, because of the fact that he's doing a much better job in the strikeout to walk ratio. I see continual improvements in his game despite the greatness that he began at. But again, there's no wrong answer here, Jeff. And frankly, we've talked about this a lot. I've written about this forever. First round, don't make a bad pick. But I don't think, it's a bad pick to take either one. It's a bad pick to take Gleyber Torres. That's a bad pick. But otherwise, either one, I would go with Trout.
So let's go line by line and see what the right pick is. If we're talking batting average, which one of these are you more secure in having a high batting average? I think Mookie Betts led the league in batting average last year, 346, which he hit 80 points higher than he did a year before, so it's pretty crazy. But you look at career averages, and again, 5 years compared to 9 years or whatever it is, 307 to 303. Mm-hmm. So Betts or Trout, batting average, which one are you more sure will hit for a higher batting average?
I'm not sure there is an answer that's for sure. I'd say I'm going to give Trout the minor advantage.
Okay. What about in power?
Power, I would give Trout the advantage. Yes.
I give Trout the advantage there too. I give Trout the advantage in batting average too, and it's very, very close though, in my opinion. What about runs scored? I mean, you look at the two of these guys, and Mookie has scored an enormous amount of runs last year. Trout had over 100. He's backed over 100 last year, but 101. The Red Sox lineup versus the Angels lineup. Which one are you more sure will score more runs?
I guess I'd say Betts. It depends too. Is he going to hit leadoff? Is he going to hit third? Or that kind of thing. Same with Trout. Are they going to move him around? The lineup and the ballpark favor Betts, so I will go with Betts.
What about RBI?
That one's totally up in there. You can't knock in 100 runs batting leadoff. I mean, it happens, but, the Darren Erskine.
I agree with you. Mm-hmm. But here's my case for the runs category for Mookie Betts, too.
Okay.
That lineup.
It's really good.
Red Sox lineup. And you're totally right. But if your seventh and eighth place hitters are, 25 home run, 280 hitters, can you drive in 100 hitting leadoff? I don't know. I think it's viable because it used to be the old story was, bottom of the order would be, garbage. They weren't getting on base. If you're getting guys at 330 on base percentages at the bottom of the lineup, the lineup's turning over more. He'd be able to drive in 100. That's my pitch for it, at least. Right.
Well, yeah, the leagues are different, too. If you're in the National League, you have no chance.
In the National League.
Yeah, if you're in the American League, you can. It comes down to so many things because in the run scored and RBIs, you're dependent on your teammates. Mm-hmm. So ultimately, the one issue I have overall with Trout and Betts is I view what Trout did last year as being – who Trout can be. With Betts, I feel like Betts was at 105%. It's hard to envision all of those things happening again for Betts. So I'm kind of building in some slight pullback there, whether that's fair or not, we shall see. But I'm building in just some slight pullback there. So even though when you're saying the team or the lineup, yeah, I agree with that. But everything went right last year. The only hiccup he had was that health issue for a while. That was it. And it's hard to be 100% year after year.
It is. But I look at the Red Sox and I look at the Angels. And I look
you take bats first? You said Trout. Well,
this is where I'm leading towards. So for me, Trout, batting average, Trout, home runs. Right. Mookie Betts, he gets the runs. He gets the RBI for me, Ray. Because okay. I think he's going to hit, in my opinion, I think he hits second. Mm-hmm. And if I think if anything, if there are certain injuries, I think they will move him down to a more formidable third or fourth spot in the lineup and give him more RBI opportunities. So I like him for those. So we're 2-2 out of our five categories, mm-hmm. and now we get to speed, Ray Flowers.
Right.
Out Mookie Betts, which one do you like more for speed, for stolen bases?
Backing me in the corner where I have to say Trout or my analysis is incorrect.
Not necessarily because, no. I mean, you don't necessarily agree with my
– I mean, yeah. I'd say Trout.
But, for steals?
Yeah, but
– You're such a liar. You're such a liar. There's no way you trust him more for steals.
Yeah, you don't trust Trout for 30 steals?
No.
For 30? You trust Betts for 30.
30 steals? That was a long time.
Betts only has one season of 30.
Really?
Yeah.
I mean, since, right. 26, 30. Okay.
Yeah, you look at the last 3 years, and I don't have numbers. You look at the last 3 years, they're probably separated by, what, 4 steals, 5? They're the same. It's really tough.
I know.
That's really tough.
This is a legit argument. So for me, it's 3-2 in favor of Mookie Betts. And now you think, all right, well, man, didn't you just say that you like Mike Trout more? Yeah, because now you have to get into a couple other things, and that's sort of durability. And that's how many plate appearances they're going to get. That's, you know, how well they will stick and resting during slumps and things like that. And it's, you know, Mike Trout is the emperor of Major League Baseball right now. And so these intangibles, they're not going to mess around with his batting order the way they will with rookie bets.
Let me jump in here, Jeff, because we're transitioning to another sport. In football, don't trust Christian McCaffrey because of his size. Don't trust these little scat back kind of guys. Do you look at Betts when compared to Trout and factor that in all? It's different in baseball, but Betts is 5'9", 180.
Back to what we're talking about just now. Mookie Betts is a small guy.
He's a little guy.
I never thought he'd hit 30 home runs. I mean,
no one did, Jeff. You're not the only one. No one.
I don't know if which one shocks me more, Lindor or Betts. Now, Lindor, I put it on records that this guy will never. I think I said more than 12 home runs. I mean, you want to talk about a terrible take, evidently, but look at the minor leagues. Look at his stature. Look at his velocity and exit velocity in the minors and his arc of his contact. Mm-hmm. You know, never would have projected him for a perennial 20-plus, let alone 30-plus guy in the majors. So, and Betts right along with that. So,
I mean, this is basically Tariq Cohen and Jordan Howard. In terms of they're not the same size, but same. That's like the comparison between Trout and Betts. Like it's a massive difference between these two players, Jeff.
Yeah, it is when you talk about stature and how they look and the physicality. I absolutely look at it. So for me, it is a big thing. And that's why I like all those intangibles. Mike Trout wins them all. And that's why he ultimately wins my vote. So that's mm-hmm. This is a case where I don't think it's just based on stats. The only thing we could really say is that we have seen it more from Mike Trout. That's mm-hmm. off. We're basing it strictly on numbers and analytics, which a lot of seasonal fantasy baseball players, including you and myself, do. Mookie Betts should be the number one pick because I think we all kind of would favor, or at least a lot of us would favor him in, you know, the five standard categories over Mike Trout. It's really just that we're more comfortable. Body type, not moving around in the order. We've seen it more. We're more comfortable with that pick. But it just shows you how, when we break it down, how close this decision really is, and that getting the number two pick this year, pretty damn good. Number two pick has been awful for me. I did not want the number two pick in recent years, right? But mm-hmm. this year, I'm very comfortable with
it. Yeah. And I think the real question isn't who you take one or two, and it'll probably be Trout and Betts 95% of the time. Mm-hmm. The question is, when does the first pitcher come off the board, and how does that impact the first round more than it is the order? Because we kind of end up getting settled here, and whatever sport we're doing, the ADP, oh, my gosh, you can't take Devonta Freeman ahead of Todd Gurley. What are you doing? Like, you know, it's one guy's 5 and one guy's 1. You can't do that. That's what happens. And so a month from now, when you look at the drafts, and 95% of the time Trout's been number one, it'll solidify him as the number one pick, even as you noted that we just discussed, it's not clear-cut in a 95 to 5% manner.
Right, exactly. So with the rest of the FSGA draft, you know, we'll get into some more picks as we go. First round, which everybody I'm sure is interested in, went Trout Betts, just for clarification. Francisco Lindor, Jose Ramirez, the Indians, which is kind of – that doesn't make me feel great either. Not bad picks by any stretch, but I just – we're always concerned. And then what you just talked about, the first pitcher off the board, we didn't have to wait long. And pitching – if we've learned anything through the first, you know, not halfway done yet, but first third of this draft, is that pitching is at a premium right now. Ray Flowers and Scherzer going fifth overall sort of, you know, affirms that. And the fact that there's – it used to be when was Kershaw going off the board, and then, you know, we'll get Scherzer – or Scherzer. What
the nice. That was a good combo. Scherzer, yeah.
Or Sale later on in the second or third round. We had three pitchers, Scherzer, DeGrom, and Sale, all go in the first round. Ray, why is pitching suddenly at a premium when the actual impact of starting pitching is going down?
That's a great question. I think there's a little bit of a disconnect. Half of what you said is thought of as the fact by people, and the other half isn't. And by that I mean people believe that there are a certain group of pitchers, let's say 15 of them just for the sake of argument, 15 of them that are stars. And then after that, you run into risks, whether it's performance or health or whatever. So everyone thinks they've got to get one of those 15 guys. The problem is the second part of that, the time actually on the field. These guys don't all throw 200 innings. Can you trust Jacob DeGrom to throw 200 innings? Eh. Can you trust Chris Sale to get there? Eh. Carlos Carrasco? Eh. I mean, so you start going through the names here, and it's like, well – Clayton Kershaw certainly can't. Blake Snell's never been there. Noah Syndergaard, Walker Buehler. Like these guys, you know, they might have great skills, but if they're throwing 176 innings, is it worth that investment? My contention is it's not. And we play the game of, you know, especially this early, because someone drafted in the first – a pitcher drafted in the first five rounds here, and this draft is going to blow their arm out in spring training. It's going to happen. Yeah. It does every year. Someone the SP1 or SP2 is going to be done before the season begins, okay? So that's another reason why I think you draft a little bit differently at this point, because we're really uncertain, not just the guys coming back from injury, but just where players are, because we haven't seen anything happen in spring. And I found it interesting in the draft, just as another example, Jeff, that everyone at that draft, and you were there, everyone at the draft kept saying, 200 strikeouts. I need my 200 strikeouts. I need my 200 strikeouts. I need my 200. I got Jose Berríos in the fifth round. He had 200 strikeouts last year.
Right.
Okay? I got him in the fifth round, and no one cared that I took Berríos. Charlie Wiegert kind of made fun of me.
I made fun of you.
Yeah, and it's like
I'm not a Berríos guy. I think Berríos is always overrated, even though I don't think he's bad by any stretch. I just looked at he was like gonna come in and wipe off. I watched this guy pitch a lot, and it seems like he dominates certain competition and then is very mediocre to subpar against anything that challenges him.
Well, I will say this. Okay, I love his mechanics, I love everything, you know, okay. Broader picture, you say all the time. I'm gonna hold your stuff against you, Jeff.
Okay.
You say in football, it's not the player, it's the numbers. It's not the player, it's the situation. It's not the player, it's the opportunity. I kind of view baseball the same way, ultimately. I mean, people consider and say, is Jose Berríos a one? I'm not going to argue that he's an SP1. You can argue he's a two, fine. Is Kyle Hendricks great? I'm not going to argue he's great. Is Cole Hamels great? No. Is Miles Mikolas great? No. These are my pitchers, by the way.
Yeah.
Are these guys great? No. But what do I have? I have three guys there who all had a whip of under 115 last year, all three of them, three of the four. The only one that didn't was Hamels. I have 280-plus strikeout guys. I have four guys that legitimately, they all threw 178 innings last year, whatever it was. So it's like, is that really bad? It's not one player. It's not the days of Priest Holmes and LaDainian Tomlinson in fantasy football. It's not one player. And even if you take a superstar in the first round, you take Jacob DeGrom, okay? Let's look at just that quickly as that example. Ron Chandler took Jacob DeGrom, who's arguably the best of the pitchers I'm discussing. Then he took Jack Flaherty. I don't think Jack Flaherty's any different than Jose Berríos. So, okay. Ron's third starting pitcher is Tyler Glasnow. Now, tremendous talent. I would love to have him on my team. Is he an SP3? Is he better than Cole Hamels or Miles Mikolas? No. So even though that Ron took DeGrom in the first round, my top four pitchers, by the way, only has three, my top four starting pitchers are better than his. I think my top three starting pitchers are better than his top three. So it's the combination of players, not necessarily the player. And I think some people get lost in that. They think they've got to get one of the top four or five starting pitchers. And if they don't, oh, no, I just don't see it that way.
Glasnow is an interesting case because we're waiting for him to figure out his mechanics for years now. It mm-hmm. seemed like he got to that point late last year and could be an interesting guy, but also could go the other direction. You mm-hmm. always worry about these guys, you know, which direction does the career take them? And, you know, there's the, I always compare him to Randy Johnson, right? It's like mm-hmm. Randy Johnson came up. He was an absolute mess. I mean, a mess. Couldn't find a place to save his entire life. He was a sideshow freak kind of player. Became a Hall of Famer, one of the best pitchers of all time because he figured out his mechanics. He could repeat it and all that. Glasnow seemingly got there last year, all right? But can he maintain it? Big ask for him as well. So that's my thought on Tyler Glasnow. Pitching overall, what about closers, right? Let's talk about how this factors in.
You took one early.
That's a great story, by the way, is that – so like me and Ted Schuster partner on these teams, and the reason we do it is because I do most of the drafting and the setup, most of it, I'll say. But Ted's the guy who maintains it when I have to leave in July and August, which I always have to do to run our football side of the business and to do all the stuff I do for fantasy football. And, you know, I make no apologies about it because it's something even a lot of you guys listening to this podcast will be on the other side come July and August. It's the way the world goes. Schuster, Ted and I, there's history here because we got absolutely condemned for taking, I think we took two closers relatively early in the first 10 rounds. First 10 or 11 rounds last year, we got blown up and people went nuts saying that we're going to lose and finish last and blah, 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 all this. It was like unnatural obsession with us taking closers early. So, and it worked out. It was a really smart idea. I think we had Kimbrel and Jansen, if I'm not mistaken. Do we have Diaz and Kimbrel? I forget, but worked out very, very well either way. And this year, as we've already seen, Ray, people are all of a sudden buying up closers left, right, and center. But I didn't want to go that early, and it was the fifth round when this was all coming to a head. And Schuster was all about it. Let's go get Diaz. I was saying, no, this team needs more power. I was contemplating a move for Madison Bumgarner. I was contemplating some of the, you know, another starting pitcher there. At that point, I think we only had Syndergaard, which, you know, is very, 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 very risky. And when we're in this room and it's being broadcast on Sirius XM radio, there's like when the guy in front of you picks, there's this time. They have to set it up. They have to input it in the system. And then you report your pick to the guy who's sort of the consigliere. He reports it to the guys in the broadcast booth, and then they put it in. So they put it into the system. So it's like this whole timing element thing that we're trained to do. I'm ready to go with – I can't remember who the outfielder was, but it was a power hitter at that spot. And then I was also debating between Bumgarner. I was asking Ted, all right, which one do you prefer? He went and just chose Edwin Diaz. Boom. Without anything. Even without telling the people, the broadcast.
He told me before he did it, he was going to do it.
Yeah.
So he discussed it with me, but not his co-manager.
Yeah, exactly. Which was a real jag move by Ted Schuster. Now, I was pretty pissed. I really was pretty pissed because this did throw off what my plan was and who I had queued up and my sort of my projections that were going by. It threw a wrench into a lot of this stuff. I'll say this though. I'll give him this credit. It was a good move because I had no idea the run of closers that were going to go. It's profound, stunning, because this draft is known for anti-closer syndrome, ACS. Like, it's been that way for half of a decade. And now all of a sudden we had a major run of closers. So I'm kind of happy we got it in the way. And also who we got in round six was Chris Archer, you know, over Bumgarner. I was fine with that. But did you think it was kind of a jag move?
Yeah, I think it was kind of a jag move. It was funny. I thought it was funny. Just like you would think it was funny. Just like when your buddy does something and you can bust his balls. It's
oh, yeah.
You know, as long as he didn't get hurt or something, it's funny. I don't know how you do that as a co-manager. Jeff, if you were my co-manager, I would never do that.
I couldn't even think of that.
Like, he leaned over and he's like, yeah, I'm just going to take him. And I'm like, okay. I think I might have even said, I dare you to do it. I might have even egged him on to be honest.
I'm sure he did.
Yeah, probably.
You try to play nice, but you're not.
Yeah.
You're just as mean as me.
Is it a bad pick? I'm not going to say it's a bad pick. I think the way it came down was weird. I'll say this, that in the, you know, the Fantasy Guru draft guide, and, you know, folks, again, if you're listening, you can go fantasyguru.com. You can get in, you know, get signed up. One of those articles is Let's Move On from Saves. And in there, I point out, I mean, just think about this, because you're talking about the run of saves, right? Okay. How many pitchers have had 30 saves the last two seasons?
Two?
The last two. How many different pitchers have had 30 saves in each 2017 and 2018?
How many different pitchers?
How many different pitchers? Diaz is one of them, by the way.
Man, I don't know. 13?
No. That's what people think. Four.
Wow. I know over the last 3 years, isn't it three?
Yeah, if you go beyond that, I got the numbers here. Four closers have 30 saves each of the last two seasons. They're the only two guys that have done 40 saves the last four seasons.
Wow.
So that's it. There's only 11 guys that had 30 saves last year, just 11 different guys. If you look at pitchers, how many guys had 20 saves in 2017 and 2018, each of those years? Say the number you just said.
13.
There you go. 13. Yeah. 20 saves. There's 13 guys that have had 20 saves. Everyone listening to this has picked up maybe a guy a year or one every other year off the waiver wire or in the last round of his draft that saved 20 games. Okay. There's 13 guys that have done that the last two seasons. So I wish, if you want to grab a closer because you feel great, and I know you guys aren't expecting 55 saves out of, you know.
Oh, God.
Yes. If you're going to grab one guy, fine. If you want to grab two, I don't really like it. I've tried it. It's never quite worked out. Okay, fine. I have no problem with it. But this run, like you talked about, this aggressive run to get closers, when, again, history shows us 13 guys have had just 20 saves the last 2 years, it's why I haven't taken a closer at this point. It's like, I'm just going to wait and find these guys in the later rounds.
Yeah, and that's – when it comes to closers, and that, I was always contrarian doing it. Like last year we did it to be a contrarian move. Like everybody, they want to, everyone's going to, last year at this time, everybody was talking, well, we're just going to wait. We'll get them on waivers. And I always size up people. That's why we try to teach you people. It's all about your competition. I just mentioned earlier in the show where he's one of my best friends and everything else. But I also noticed when he was talking, my competitive juices started going, I don't like Ray being. I don't like being Ray being aggressive because I need to count on his passiveness and his, you know, his comfortability. I need to rely on that to get an edge as a competitor, right? That's what I have to do. When he starts doing the other way, I'm scared. It's the same thing with the rest of the industry. When I'm in a 14-team draft and 11 out of the 14 people are saying, closer is a closer. Nobody cares. I'll get him on waivers, I think. I'm just going to get the two guys or three guys with contracts that aren't going to lose that. I'll get them at a decrease of that, a lower value. I'll get them in a later round than I thought, and I will have a significant advantage. And then all these 11 teams are going to be fighting on waiver wires, driving up the price for every single arm that comes available. Like, I just play it that way. Mm-hmm. Now it's the opposite. Now everybody's doing it. And when Ted made the move and sprung Diaz on me, I'm thinking, oh, damn it. Now we have to go grab another one. You know, let's grab – Kimbrel was still on the board. He hasn't found a team yet. I'm like, well, you know, let's try to wait. Maybe we'll get Kimbrel a round or two later. And then the run happened. Bing, 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 bing. And it's like, okay, well, I'm glad we got our guy. But I'm going to wait now. I have no choice because it doesn't really make sense for me. Some teams have two closers already. And I don't want to be in that realm either. I don't want to think just random guys. Because then you spend a bad pick and you still might have to chase them on the waiver wire. It's either or for me. So that's just how I view it when it comes to closers and all of that. Another trend that we saw here, Ray Flowers, for in this draft overall. Well, again, we'll get into some of the specific picks and the makeups of our teams and all that good stuff a little bit later on. But stolen bases, you talked about it early. I will say you took Jose Altuve with the 9th overall pick. I took Christian Yelich with the 10th overall pick. And I think those are two picks that do emphasize the fact that steals are important, especially with the fact that we both passed up on Bryce Harper and J.D. Martinez, some of the more powerful bats that may have been on our board. How much emphasis are you putting on steals?
I've always thought at the start of a draft that my goal is to find well-rounded players. I always talk about, you know, building a foundation, building a pyramid. You got to have that foundation set. If you don't, the thing's going to fall over. What happens frequently, and what makes sense, okay, that's what makes sense, to say, I'm going to take JD Martinez, Bryce Harper, I'm going to take these guys, I'm going to take Manny Machado. It makes all the sense in the world. I mean, they're stable guys. Everything looks good. The bats are impressive, all those kind of things. But you can't count on them for more than, you know, a handful of steals, maybe 10 steals. What happens when you build a team that way? And again, there's nothing wrong with building it with stable guys and all that. The problem then is you are forced to take Billy Hamilton. You are forced to take D. Gordon. You are forced to take those kind of players that really aren't good overall players later on in the draft, because you did it last year in the FSTA draft. Yeah. You went Stanton, Judge, and Hamilton. Uh-huh. Makes sense. And if you add it all together and it all works out, great. But if the guy doesn't come through, i.e. Billy Hamilton last year when he lost 20 steals, wow, now we're right kind of back where we started. So I don't like the idea of taking players consistently that don't contribute across the board. I was going to take Arenado or Altuve with that pick. Arenado went the pick before me. I was thinking Arenado because he's, you know, Colorado, he's going to hit 300, he's going to go 31-30, and okay, that's fine, I'll deal with it. But being able to take a guy that steals bases and contributes across the board while posting a good batting average, it's rare. Finding a 300 hitter with 20 steals, those guys are gone after the third round. They're just gone. I mean, they're not there.
Right.
And so what I was looking to do in this draft was to find some speed at the top. So two of my first four picks in Segura and Altuve, I think, are 20 steal guys. Maybe more, but I'll say 20 just to, you know, there. And then I look at my first four guys in Altuve, Freeman, Bryant, and Segura. My first four hitters are going to hit 300. Flat out. They just do what they did last year. My first four hitters are batting 300. No one else is going to match that. Right. In this day and age, that – so not only did I do that, I also added in the speed. I didn't do the Stanton, the Judge, and end up with 9 stolen bases. I have the 300 batting average. I've got 40 to 50 steals. And then I continue to build from there. Took Tommy Pham, who a lot of people don't realize was one of 7 guys to go 20-15-100 last year. He had a great finish for the Rays when no one was paying attention. So 3 of my first 5 hitters are all guys that can steal 20-plus bases, giving me some base there and some comfort that I don't have to reach later for guys that are more of one-trick pony status, Jeff.
I love what you did with the hitters. I mean, you locked in the position players, and you did it. I mean, I think you got lucky, quite honestly. This fell to you, like the Altuve pick. And the thing is, how did you adjust that, too, with Altuve? Because, all right, so we're doing this FSGA draft. And you guys can go to it. I think it's rtsports.com/SiriusXM if you just want the link, and you can follow along and all that good stuff. But Altuve's ADP was about 15 and a half. Like, it was almost 16th overall. You chose him 9th overall. Like, that, you take some – and there's concern because he's getting up there in age. He's a little guy. His power came out of nowhere the last couple of years. Stolen bases have gone down. So there's a little bit of a concern. What made you like over? There was no, because I was thinking I might be able to get Altuve, and mm-hmm. I thought Altuve was like my last option if a bunch of these guys were. I toyed with the idea thinking I could get Altuve maybe on the way back, which probably wouldn't have happened, obviously. But I at least entertained that idea where you said, "Screw it, I'm not worried about ADP right now for at least from the NFBC. I'm just worried about getting the best player," and it worked out because then you got that and Freeman and Bryant. Holy Lord, those are some good second and third round picks.
Yeah, I mean, it's all about constructing a unit. Nothing's in a vacuum. We don't want to deal with it that way, but it's not. It's about putting the pieces together. I look at ADP and I look at it and I'm aware of it, but as I write and as in the Fantasy Guru Draft Guide and how to properly use ADP, there's an article in there talking about the right way to use ADP isn't to be a slave to ADP. It's the wrong way to do it. I talked earlier when you asked about Trout and Betts, and I said it's wrong to take either or. No, it's not wrong to take either or. It's wrong to take Gleyber Torres in the first round. It's not wrong to jump a guy's ADP by 6-7 spots. And just like on the other side, you don't have to take a player who's fallen past his ADP 6 or 7 spots. You don't have to do that. I didn't jump out there and say, you know what, AJ Pollock is my guy. 2016. I'm taking AJ Paul. I didn't do that. I took Jose Altuve. So there are concerns. You're right. There's the knee and the surgery, and there's legitimate concerns there. But I just looked at the rest of what I anticipated occurring, and I thought a couple pitchers would go, and they did. I don't love the idea of taking Bryce Harper ever. I don't know where he's going to be, and I'm on record of not trusting him. I certainly don't want to take a pitcher the first couple of rounds. So I just took a gamble that I would get a player that I could build around. And I wanted Bregman, who you took at the pick before me in the second round. But Freddie Freeman is as good a hitter, really, as there is in baseball. He's a very good hitter. He's not a superstar statistically. Okay, that's fair. He's not a 40 home run guy. He's not going to hit 340, but he's such a good hitter. And that first base position, and we were joking about it at the draft.
Not great.
It gets thin quick.
And you know? And I ran into that. That's where I wound up at, because I didn't get, and that's where like that fifth round pick, I can't remember exactly, but I think it was a first baseman that I had on my radar and was going to make the selection, and it just didn't. And then Ted took Diaz, and it had to go in a different way. Oh, yeah, I think it was it Will Myers?
Will Myers. He's always your guy. Yeah.
Well, it's always my guy. So, you know, it threw things off, and I didn't get my first baseman until I just took him in the 12th round, which is where we're sort of at right now. But, yeah, it was first base does dry up very, very fast. There's no question about that. Now, this draft, it logs on, and we'll continue to update you in future podcasts if you guys are interested in it. But also
– article at the site, too, fantasyguru.com. The article's up there.
Fantasyguru.com. Follow the article as well. Don't forget that you got to buck the trend at some point. What we're looking for is we use things like ADP to get an edge on what the rest of – what people are doing. People, there are so many people, like Ray was saying, that are slaves to ADP. Just slaves. They will not draft a guy before his slot or whatever. They just won't do it. We have to find those players. The job that we have is to find the players, like I think Chris Bryant, for instance. That is just great. We know this guy. We know the talent. We know he was banged up last year, right? We know that him at the third round. This is a first/second round guy. He could outperform that. And as good as that may be, there are many, many, many others that are later on, as Ray and I continue in this draft, that are in the teens and 12th round picks who like Josh Donaldson, like another guy that we were talking about off air, Ray, we had conversations and Ted and I were very, very hot after the son of Josh Donaldson. We didn't end up getting him, but I mean, that's a guy that could be a, the return second, third round value. He's going in what, seventh round?
Yeah.
Okay. Well, you know, that's what we're looking for. And that's the goal of using ADP. It's not to say, oh my God, look around the room. Is it safe to take this guy now? That's how a lot of people use it. And that's the wrong way. We need to look at the players who are being taken later and go earlier on them, get them at a discount, get them before everybody else is hot on their trail, and build our team accordingly. We want a bunch of guys who outperform, and by a lot, where they're going to be. One other thing we got to get to, Ray, before we get people out of here, is you mentioned A.J. Pollock of the Dodgers. He just signed this week with L.A., obviously. Breaks my son's heart, by the way. It's my eight-year-old son. Right? Favorite player in baseball. Has been for 3 years since we moved to Arizona. He just loves A.J. Pollock. He loves that he runs and dives after the ball and hits home runs and does everything. What did the Dodgers get here with the acquisition of A.J. Pollock, sort of picking up for Yasiel Puig, I suppose? Mm-hmm. What do they get, and how does this affect his fantasy value?
It's a much worse – and I'm not much worse. It's a worse environment to hit in, but he has the advantage of not having to face the Dodgers 19 times. Now he could face the Diamondbacks pitching 19 times, which is a better spot to be in. So there's some equilibrium that comes there. I think the biggest issue for Pollock and his outlook is just being on the field. I mean, quite frankly, he is a 2020 talent. It doesn't matter where he's playing. He's a 2020 talent. What can he do? The last 3 years, he has not appeared in 115 games one time. Okay, the last 3 years, he's averaged 79 games played. It's half the season. He's not on the field. And even when he's been on the field, there's been some good and some bad. He's shown the power and speed that we're kind of used to. But at the same time, he's hit 260. You know, so now we're talking about a guy who the last 3 years has dealt with all kinds of injuries, barely league average in the batting average category. A guy that even the last 2 years played 112 and 113 games, so he's missing 40 plus games that you got to backfill with someone else. It's just risky to trust him. I mean, flat out, it's risky to trust him. You can't consistently think he's going to be on that field. His track record of ill health goes back for years. He's a excellent defensive player. He does have that power speed, but you have to put aside the 2015 season, the 2039, all that. That's never happening again. That was a career best season. He is a good player, Jeff, that in some respects is looked at as a great player. If he could only stay healthy. Well, yeah, but he doesn't. So it's kind of a moot point, isn't it?
NFBC 117.55 in drafts since the start of the year in the month of January in 2019 is where AJ Pollock is going. Does it go up? Does he go higher now that he's actually signed on the team? Or does he drop lower because of the environment?
It'll go up because he's on the Dodgers. People will view it that way. And I think there'll be the assumption that the team is better, you know, and they won't factor in the park, or they'll just think the team is better. And I think the longer we get removed from Diamondbacks and we get closer to the Dodgers and closer to opening day, especially as a good spring, that number's going up, Jeff.
Yeah, I think so too. And I like AJ Pollock a lot from a fantasy perspective, but Ray, you rose some good points with the batting average. And I do think the power numbers still gets to play in some Coors Field. We'll still play at Chase a bunch. Dodger Stadium, not great for him, but more RBI opportunities at least.
Victor Robles could be AJ Pollock this year.
Will you tuck your junk for
I'm just saying.
Victor Robles? Like how many different players is Victor Robles gonna be?
Yeah, it's only going to be guys that...
Tight are your pants when you think about Victor Robles?
It's only going to be guys that... Well, I picked him in the Dynasty League. You'd be proud of me. I think I took him in the Dynasty League last year. We're doing with the Series X. I think I took him in the fourth round. So look at that.
Am I in that league?
Yeah.
Am I in that?
Are you in that league?
I don't know. I don't think I am.
You're not in any. I don't even remember.
If so, I have trouble. I'm going to have trouble because I got to go find a league and keep my team. I have no idea. I don't think I'm on that team whatsoever.
You would probably know here. I'm looking at the list right now. Jeff, you're free. I do not see your name on the list.
Thank God. I'd be a little bit of trouble there, ladies and gentlemen. All right. That's a good place to cap it off here. Hopefully you guys are enjoying the podcast. Remember, download it, subscribe to it so that it auto downloads. Leave your feedback, good, bad, or indifferent. We're not scared of you saying, if you guys want to hit us up, you got topics that you want to hit. If you want us to talk about more prospects, you want us to talk more pitching, relief pitching, relievers, categories, forming leagues, different styles, keeper dynasty styles of fantasy baseball. You just want us to talk about more of that, what we see coming up, position battles in spring training. Hit us up at Jeff_Manns on Twitter, the Jeff Manns on Snapchat, Instagram, Facebook, all those. Ray Flowers can be found at Baseball Guys on Twitter. Ray, do you do Instagram?
I have an Instagram account that I set up in the spring so I could try to win some free booze.
Are you serious?
Yeah, it was when I was in Hawaii. So I was looking for some free tiki drinks.
You're a social media maven, and you had to be talked into Instagram?
Well, for boozy drinks with an umbrella? Yeah, I mean, that makes sense. But so, no, to answer your question, I have it, but I don't use it, so no one go try to find it. It won't work.
Don't find Ray on Instagram. That will leave you off with that. Remember, the draft guide available, and it's not just a draft guide. It's fantasyguru.com, but it entitles you to everything in the world you need to get you ready for your draft, to see you through your draft, and all season long. Ray has over 800 players ranked over on the site, AL only, NL only, mixed leagues, all of that is there. Ray, how many articles?
There are podcasts, by the way. We have like 10 podcasts up there as well, doing things.
We have 30 plus podcasts planned.
Yeah.
Behind the paywall over there. Yeah. Again, it's less than a buck a pod.
Last year was 475 pages. I think we're at roughly 30 articles up. By the time it's done, I'd be shocked if it was under 100.
Yeah.
Because, I mean, I'll probably do 60, 70 player profiles just on that. So we'll be well over 100 articles by the time it's done.
Exactly. Myself, Ray Flowers, Ted Schuster, Vlad Sedler, at RotoGut on Twitter, Benny Ricciardi, all will be contributing to the draft guides and the broadcast and the live streams. We'll be in the chat room over there at fantasyguru.com. Early bird pricing. It's not going to last forever, folks. So get there now. If you enjoyed the podcast, leave us a review. Subscribe to that son of a gun as well. In the meantime, we'll see you again next time, everybody, for the great Ray Flowers. This is Jeff Mance, Fantasy Baseball Elite. Deuces.